Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
It's great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you to make better financial decisions in your life. And today, there's been so much noise about the court rulings concerning how commissions will be paid for buying and selling real estate. And I want to tell you how I actually see this picture different than the headlines. And later, I've been watching what's going on with prices in the cruise industry, and I've got some tips for you if you're booking a cruise or considering booking one. So there have been a number of settlements in the real estate industry to break the historic price fixing on commissions. If you're not aware, commissions in the United States on real estate transactions are roughly triple what they are anywhere else in the developed world. Typical commissions outside the United States hover around 2% or less on the sale of a home. The United States has remained around 6%. At one time, we were a 7% market, and now, depending on whose database you believe, just under 6%, somewhere upper fives. And the changes that have brought it down from 7 to just under 6 have been because of all the technology that's available, the information that's available at your fingertips as a buyer and as a seller to get a sense of what fair market value is. That information is so available online. At the same time, our commissions have been much higher and stayed much higher than the rest of the world because of cartel-like pricing in the industry. Well, some of the lawsuit settlements recently have led to story after story saying that commissions in the United States are going to collapse and end up like the rest of the world. And you read these stories, and it's just not how this is going to play. So what you need to know is someone looking to buy or sell a home, that what you may have heard reported is not actually what's going to happen. The changes in commissions in the U.S. no doubt are going to happen, but very gradually, because businesses never willingly give up their streams of income. And I'm already reading in trade publications various consultants and people in the industry talking about workarounds where the industry will be able to preserve the 6% commission. So what will happen is this is going to be a gradual process over likely a number of years that the average commission paid on a real estate transaction will decline. Now, I do want to make a key point. Agents who know what they're doing are very valuable to both a buyer and a seller. And they deserve to be paid for what they do. But those commissions that they get paid, or fees, which are more common in other countries where it's not a flat percent rate, it's just a flat fee for various services, those fees should be set by the market. And eventually we'll get there. But in the meantime, what you're going to see is you're going to see bleeding edge kind of players offer alternative models about how you pay as a buyer or as a seller. Right now, buyers don't actually directly pay. And one of the things that the industry has lost in suit after suit is where the listing agent, the person representing the seller, pays the buyer's agent. And that's already baked into the cake. No negotiation, a percent is there. And that's one of the things that will change sooner rather than later, is I as a buyer will have to decide, am I going to go out in the marketplace by myself without representation for the biggest purchase I ever make in my life and try to negotiate both terms and conditions as well as the price? And the reality is a knowledgeable buyer's agent is so worth whatever fee you end up having to pay him or her, because these are complicated transactions. But the way it should be done and the way it will be done is the way it's done in other countries, is you as the buyer will decide, do you want that representation and what's that worth to you? And you'll decide to pay the fee or commission or whatever it is to represent you. If you want to go out on your own, you'll pay, obviously, no fee for that, but there will be a fee that the seller will pay for representation, just like before. But that fee will more likely be 2 or 3% instead of the automatic usual 6%. So change will happen, but this is not like a light switch, you know, that we were paying 6 and now we're going to pay 2. It's going to be a big era of experimentation, multiple pricing models, and it's going to be one thing of complexity added in that has not existed at this point, but ultimately to the advantage of your wallet as a buyer or a seller. I love, Krista, on any of these financial stories, how the stories that writers write and report on television, whatever, they're always like, this is how it worked. This is how it's going to work. And forget that there's a long period of time in between for transition.
For sure. Okay. Kevin in California wrote in. He said, I've owned a condo unit in San Diego since 2010, and it's been rented out to a long-term tenant. Recently, the HOA fees increased to $550 per month. However, that's not my main worry. The condo building's exterior is managed by the association, which includes building insurance. This year, the insurance premium skyrocketed from $95,000, which is expiring, to $475,000 renewed. Whew. All unit owners were assessed an additional $1,500 each across 248 units. But here's the real concern. The building units are now significantly underinsured, with the building coverage limit dropping from about $95 million to just $8 million. Given my substantial equity position, how should I protect myself, or should I consider selling? Your insights would be greatly appreciated.
The numbers that you gave, Kevin, are so extreme that I'd say the liability, the risk you face and your fellow owners face in a catastrophic loss are so bad that I hate to say this, because you have a property that you bought so low. And here we are 14 years later. I don't even know how many times the value of that unit has potentially doubled. I would say with that kind of exposure, you should consider selling, unless you're the gambling sort, because odds are there won't be a complete catastrophic loss. But if there is, you're going to walk away from so much of the equity you've developed over the last 14 years. So if it were me and your situation, you clearly stated how bad the problems are. The fees going up, the special assessment, enormously underinsured, the premiums for that underinsurance, 5 times what they were before. I would really consider bailing. I would take your winnings and take the risk out of your life. You will have to pay capital gains tax on the gains you've had over these years.
Anonymous in Texas says, "Hi, Clark. I have to relocate from Texas to Arizona before the end of the calendar year. I own a home with a 4.125% interest rate, and I'm considering renting it out versus selling it. I have a trustworthy family member who is interested in buying in to make themselves a 50% owner, and we would use that lump sum to recast the mortgage and make the rental immediately cash flow positive. What things do I need to be aware of when going on this route, and is this something you would recommend doing? Or would you just sell the house and use the proceeds toward the purchase of the next primary residence in Arizona? Thanks for your advice over the years. You showed me the tools that I need to have already acquired a six-figure sum across my retirement and investment accounts in my mid-20s.
Awesome. Okay, so I want you to do something first on that very last thing you said, just to see what you've done for yourself by accumulating six figures in investment dollars already in your mid-20s. If you go and you use one of the online calculators, we have one that we're proud of at Clark.com. There are many others out there. And you see what just the money you've already put in will be worth 40 years from now in your mid-60s. It will shock you how wealthy, how financially secure you'll be just based on what you've already accomplished by your mid-20s. Now, the home thing, you have thrown such an unusual curveball here with having this 4.25%, 4.125% mortgage on a property. You're moving maybe 1,000 miles away from Texas to Arizona, and bringing the relative in is the really complicated part. So you bring in the trusted relative, you sell them half interest in the property and recast the mortgage. There's risk in the case that the mortgage is not paid at some point, because you continue to shoulder all the risk of that mortgage, not the trusted relative, because you're the one who took the mortgage out and the rest. Also, you may trigger what's known as a due on sale clause with a 50% change in ownership, where you lose legally the right to that 4.125% mortgage, and you have to pay off the property because of the fact that you have had this substantial change in ownership. If you really want to consider keeping the property, bringing this relative in, you need to hire a real estate lawyer in Texas, in the county where the property is, to see how you could do an arrangement with the relative that would not trigger the due on sale clause and would properly protect your interests. In a case like this, the added complexity you're bringing in with the trusted relative, my first preference, even though I hate you giving up the 4.125% mortgage, is when you give me the other either or, sell the property, give up this incredibly great mortgage rate that's not available anymore, and use the proceeds towards buying your new home, your primary residence in Arizona. But if you do want to proceed with having the relative involved, don't do anything in terms of making a deal until a real estate lawyer who you have hired and paid for his or her time structures the deal in a way that it doesn't blow up your mortgage and that the deal itself doesn't blow up on you or your relative later.
Linda in Georgia says, "Our HOA for the community recently adopted a no rentals policy for lease agreements less than a year for the subdivision and has hired a company to literally police all residents in regard to the number of occupants in their private residence, and furthermore wants to approve any potential leases prior to renting any property. I find this a complete invasion of my personal and residential privacy and an overstepping of their authority while supposedly representing our community. This is the government census bureau's job, and even then the information is not guaranteed to be confidential. How does the subcontractor hired by the HOA guarantee confidentiality of the information when that company, Rental Management Solutions, is itself not even registered with the Better Business Bureau in order to check its references or background complaints?"
So, Linda, you're fired up. All right. From the way you have submitted this, I'm gathering that these are single-family homes in a mandatory homeowners association community. When you live in a mandatory homeowners association community, they are the equivalent of a government. they are allowed to set all kinds of rules, including the height of your fence, the style of your fence, what color your door can be, what kind of grass you can plant. I mean, they control what happens with the properties in the development. More and more mandatory homeowners associations, as well as condo associations, are placing tight restrictions on rentals. And they're doing so because of the transient nature that has occurred with Airbnbs. Governments around the country and associations, especially condo associations, are banning Airbnb rentals. And it sounds like that's what your community's after, is ending the transient nature that occurs with Airbnb. So they have the right to do so. It is clearly an invasion of every person's privacy in a mandatory homeowners association community. And it is part of what you buy into when you buy into a mandatory homeowners association. That's why there are people who, one of the criteria when they look for a house to buy is they will only buy in a neighborhood that does not have a mandatory homeowners association, so they can live as they wish pretty much on their property and in their home. As for the fact that the background checking organization is not a Better Business Bureau member, I don't know what to say about that, because they're a business-to-business kind of organization. They're not a business-to-consumer organization. And they, an organization like that routinely would not be a member of a Better Business Bureau. But it is an option in a mandatory homeowner association. They can do this. More and more will. If you don't like it and other homeowners don't like it, throw out the board, run for office, change the rules. We had the most unusual questions about real estate.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you do? You stay up all night, midnight oil, coming up with those?
I had them in my pocket.
I love the variety of those. Well, coming up next, I want to talk to you about what's going on in the cruise industry as we approach the summer cruise ship business, which is so big, what you need to know to protect your wallet.
Debit card users, listen up. You've worked hard for your money. Now it's time to make it work even harder for you. With Discover Cashback Debit, everyone can get cash back on everyday debit card purchases. That's right, earn on things like gas, groceries, and even that midday latte. And to top it off, there are no fees, period. Yep, that means you won't be charged fees on your checking account. This one is a no-brainer. Transaction eligibility and terms at discover.com/cashbackdebit. Discover Bank, member FDIC.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
So we go on cruises a lot because it's something our son is obsessed with. He's graduating from high school in a couple of weeks. And the thing he wanted as a graduation gift, when we were talking about it, he wanted to go on a cruise. So I booked a cruise for summertime into the Caribbean. And I got an email from the cruise line. Once you're booked with the cruise line, they're emailing you all the time with the latest, greatest special offer. And I booked this cruise during wave season, which is when cruise lines normally offer their best deals of the year. But I'm seeing this email, I'm like, wow, that sounds like that's an incredible offer. Is it just more hype or is it the real deal? So I go online and I go to the ship we booked for the date we booked, look at the prices, and the cruise rates had dropped 22% for our cruise, for our cabin, for our sailing date. And so then I start digging on the website of the cruise line, and they have a lowest price guarantee. And if you find a price advertised lower than what you have booked, contact us and we will give you the difference. So I'm like, okay, wonder how this is going to work. In the case of this line, if you've already made final payment, they give you a credit towards a future cruise. It's called a future cruise credit. Or they give you back the money. So I contact the travel agency that has the booking. And sure enough, we got the 22% discount simply by asking. Then I started hunting around and I started looking on various sites, see if this was a fluke that I was saving this money or not. Well, the cruise lines have benefited so much from revenge travel over the last few years, the long period that people couldn't cruise, and the cruise industry's bookings have been just intensely strong. But now there are signs that bookings are not as strong as before, and the deals have gotten better. And so it varies by cruise line, but if you have a cruise booked for this summer or later, and you get one of those things about, hey, great new deals, go check out your cruise just as I did, your sailing, and go book as if you're, do a speculative as if you're a new passenger. See what you're offered for the same cabin category you have, and see if you aren't going to be lucky by being able to get a future credit or a refund against what you were paying, a lower price, because it's something I never thought of. Think about how often I've talked about how when you're going on a trip somewhere that you always reshop your hotel the week before you go. Never book a non-refundable hotel, by the way. Never book a non-refundable hotel because the rates move around so much. You want the freedom to be able to move into a lower price at that property or somewhere else close to your travel. And as I've said, for the last 20 years, always reshop a car rental the week before you take a trip because 90% of the time you'll get a lower price at the last minute than what you originally booked. Now I can add something that never occurred to me. The same thing can happen with a cruise, that if the cruise line has a price guarantee, you can then get that difference either as a credit or as actual. I got actual money back, 22% of the cost of the cruise back. That was good stuff. Oh, one other thing. I never buy shore excursions from a cruise line. Don't do it because they mark them up so much versus booking shore excursions with a third party. Just make sure you leave plenty of time to get back to the ship before that ship's going to sail without you. Because if you buy from a third party, you don't make it back in time, that ship sails without you, you're left on the dock.
Okay, let's go to some questions. This is from Robert in California. Clark, I'm a big fan of the show. I do have a question slightly unique. I was fortunate to take early retirement and find a real interest in becoming a travel agent. Having sent students abroad for over 20 years and having traveled extensively, I think my experience could be valuable to others. I see so many scams on the internet about courses and paying fees, etc. Any advice on how to get started? I don't know the software, Sabre, et cetera, so I'm not sure where to start.
So Sabre, for those who don't know, is what's called a global distribution system. It's a computer system for the industry. It's one of the competitors that an agency would use to book various phases of travel. And if you work in an agency that's on Sabre or one of their competitors, you're sent to school to be able to use it often, or there'll be an online course that the agency will have you do. And Robert, you've got the background of leading groups, booking groups and leading them. I would like you to go to local agencies where you live, tell them your interest in being a leisure or group travel agent, and talk to the owner or manager of that agency about how they would recommend you get started and what would be a legit path. And hopefully, ultimately, it would lead to you having a job with a local agency. You are right on the money that there are all these scams and pseudo scams out there of dare to be a travel agent. We've only heard these for how many decades?
Oh my gosh, forever.
They just morph a little over time, but know that a lot of that is just a bunch of hooey. And that's why, as someone who's had some peripheral experience booking these groups, I want you to go to an insider, to an actual agency owner or manager local, find out their recommended path. And if it doesn't seem like they're really that forthcoming or welcoming or helpful, go talk to another local owner or manager and get the drill, because they're always looking for good, motivated people.
I'm surprised there are even like physical locations of local. Do you think even are anymore?
There still are.
Okay.
Still are.
Otherwise, I would ask on Nextdoor if someone has a travel agent they've used that they like a lot locally.
That's a good idea. So what's happened with there's far fewer people doing, you know, travel agent work full time. There are those that do just corporate volume booking all day long. And those still exist, particularly for bigger companies that still use that kind of environment. And then there are the leisure agents who tend to be people who have traveled extensively, have a lot of knowledge, and take professionalized courses to be really great at knowing how to book leisure and group travel.
All right. This is from Gerald in Alabama. In a recent episode, I heard Clark mention his concerns about booking hotels. Later this year, I'll be traveling out west and the Pacific coast. What would be the best way to book the hotels? Also, is it better to try to book as many as possible before I leave or book a day in advance as I travel?
Okay. So Gerald, I touched on this a little bit earlier. If you have a fixed itinerary, you know, okay, we're going to spend 2 nights here and 1 night there. And, you know, you've got a pretty clear itinerary where you're going to be day by day, it's useful for you to book your accommodations in advance. And as I said just a few minutes ago, refundable hotel bookings. Most in non-resort locations allow a cancellation without any penalty 1 to 3 days before arrival. And as you get closer to travel, you then can reshop those. But also, if your itinerary is fluid, you have a general direction, but you don't know which day you're going to get there, it's okay, other than first night and last night, where you know pretty clearly where you're going to be, to let it float and book as you go. I find that the best booking engine out there, not every time, but I find consistently, it is the lowest cost, is using Priceline as you're going. And often my oldest brother and his wife will be on a road trip. My brother will call me and he says, you know, we're starting to get tired. What do you suggest? And I'll go online. I'll say, okay, well, if you drive to this town, there's this available in that town. I end up finding the thing for him and they book at the last minute, because the prices, weirdly, on a road trip in a 20-mile radius as you're driving up an interstate, there can be enormous differences from one exit to another, what's available and what competitive prices are available.
Too bad we don't all have you on the phone to look for us. Patrick in Virginia says, Clark, in your recent travels, have you experienced significant wait times at the clear security check? I flew 2 round trips from IAD and DCA, and both times the clear lines were the slower option. I'm both pre-check and clear, so I have a choice. Recently, it's solidly been with the pre-check line. I'm seriously thinking about not renewing clear. And by the way, they don't seem to have a customer no service email or phone number.
They actually do have a number, and you can terminate your membership pretty easily. Should I give the number?
Yeah, they make it hard to find. You find it where you say, I want to cancel my membership. Then they give you the number. And they also have an online chat you can use.
So, I'll give the number because so many people are complaining about clear right now. 855-CLEAR-ME. 855-CLEAR-ME. I have had the experience. I've been traveling recently more than once a week, been in the airports a lot around the country. I have found Clear to be a waste of my money recently as well. I don't know what is happening behind the scenes, but the Clear lines have repeatedly been longer than regular security. And so it seems to be worthless. I get Clear for free right now because of double things, airline status and a credit card I have. And it's not even worth free right now. So something has clearly gone wrong at Clear that it's no longer functional. Now, I do want to tell you, there's changes happening with security. It's killing me that I have not been able to get to Las Vegas because it's just hasn't fit any of my travel at all. Because I want to try the new TSA process that's experimental that they hope to roll out in the whole country. Do you know about this?
No.
All right. This is wild. It's 100% self-service. You go and you check yourself in to go to security. You do your own security check. It's all automated and you proceed. And I've been reading the reviews about it and it just kills me. I haven't gotten to try it. But the way we do security, the nature of security, is going to steadily change. And I'm not sure there's going to be a place in the marketplace for Clear in the future. And if anybody from Clear is really sore about what I just said about you, you're more than welcome to have rebuttal. But it does not work like it originally did, where it was a big step up from even the enhanced lines of PreCheck.
I was just talking to someone else at your company about you and travel and how you really do enjoy the process. Like the fact that you just like, you'll probably figure out a trip to Vegas just to experience that, the check-in line. Like you're just giddy in an airport and I just want someone to knock me out and wake me up when I get there, you know?
Oh, I love being in an airport. I love everything about travel except delays. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
I don't like delays any more than anybody else. I hate those. But everything else about travel I love because the whole world opens up before me. I mean, you get somewhere, you see new things. Every time I go, there's new discovery and new excitement and new enjoyment.
The process of getting there, you enjoy too. Like the actual airport.
You always learn things. You always see things.
That's great.
And people are so interesting. Particularly in airports, you see the best and worst in people because a lot of people are angsty in airports. And so sometimes you'll see not the greatest behavior from people.
That is not me, though.
No, that's not you.
No.
But you are angsty in an airport.
I just want to get there. Yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm not going to enjoy the
No, the journey process. Is part of the joy.
I know. I've got to learn from you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And just know what we're about. You learning ways to save more and spend less, avoid getting ripped off, and spend more time joyously in airports.